play.
Imagine in your mind a posh country club. The stuffy old money where the poor get snubbed. The spread is bland, sauerkraut and boiled goose. There's no way these people will ever cut loose. But then I walk in the room, hold my boombox high. And what happened next will blow your mind.
Everything got out of control. The music was so entrancing. Everyone got out on the floor. It was a bunch of old white people dancing.
A big apple where people never dance. Spirits go down while profits expand. The cops or the dealers, who's got the juice? The street vendors peddling their boiled goose. So many types of people, they'll never get along. Till I bust out my boombox and play this song.
The music washed away all the hate, and society started advancing. Every demographic was represented. It was a rainbow coalition of dancing. Whoa.
You tossed on their brittle bones. The orderlies are stealing. There's no excuse. Every day for lunch they eat boiled goose. So I grab my boombox and hit the turbo bass. And what happened next was a total disgrace.
Everybody started having sex. The music was way too powerful. A bunch of old people fucking like rabbits. It was disgusting to say the least. A boombox can change the world. But you gotta know your limits with a boombox. But this was a cautionary tale. A boombox is not a toy.
Oh my god, I was not expecting that opening song. Good call, Mr. Moderator, the wonderful PC Tunney. Holy hell. Well, welcome. What is it? Greetings and salutations, even though I'm not Christopher Platt. You're listening to Pot is War. Obviously, Chris isn't here, and I wasn't here last couple weeks. So this is just weird. We're playing, you know, musical chairs or however you really want to, or that little cup game. So we're just going to pick up a couple cups and see who's under that. No, we don't want to play the cup game.
I'm not playing the cup game with you.
Not iCup moderator. No, that's different.
No,
that's
we're not playing two podcasters, one cup. It's not happening.
Okay. That went a different direction than I was expecting, but yes. So I'm Andrew Snowflake Balls, as you could hopefully tell. I don't think I've been gone that long. The voice you just heard was our mainstay, main man, moderator, PC Tani.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And since Chris isn't here, we have our wonderful special guest from Attitude of Aggression, Big Dave.
What is up, guys? Was that the Lonely Island on there? What was that? What that was?
I think it was, but for some reason, our moderator is dying.
The first podcast in the history of where a moderator dies on air. That's just not cool.
Okay, keep going.
I guess his cats gave him a hairball to cough up. What the fuck is this?
Damn it, buddy. Jeez, we're just getting off to a ripping start here.
Man,
all I see is him walking in the back.
Yeah, I hope he's wearing board shorts and that's just not boxer briefs. I can't really tell.
I'm not telling you. It's like he sucked in a habanero or something through his nostrils or something. There he is.
Anyway, it was at the perfectly wrong time when you were asking him a question. He just goes off to die. All right.
Yeah.
All right, he's back. He's
sitting down. You're alive?
Thank you. He's got to put his earbuds in. Come on.
Damn, Tony.
Wrong throat. I'm okay.
So, Dave had a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I was just asking, was that the Lonely Island?
What, Lonely Island?
That song.
Was that
the
name of the group that did the song?
Oh, I don't know. That was Andy Samberg.
Yes, that's it. Okay.
Well, that's kind of where I thought it was Lonely Island too, because Sandberg sounded very, very familiar.
Well, it was Andy Samberg and Casablancas.
Okay.
Sure. I'm just going to call it Lonely Island.
Is that what they called themselves?
Yeah, let's just go with that. Yeah, even if it's some other band, that's a Lonely Island.
It was a Saturday Night Live. It was a Saturday Night Live digital thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's who it is.
Okay.
The dick in a box guys. Those
yes,
guys.
Without, yes.
Without Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Where's DP with the bell?
Guys, without T-Pain.
Where's DP with
just,
the bell?
Jizz in my pants guys. Those guys, right?
Threw it on the ground guys.
It ain't gay if it's a three-way. Those guys, right?
That, oh,
those
guys.
Yes.
You guys must have looked this up while I was gone.
Mother's Day. Yeah. All sorts of good stuff.
I love the Mother's Day one. That's actually a really catchy song.
What about, I don't think it was Andy Samberg, but what about, maybe it was. It was Timberlake and Lady Gaga.
The liquor store?
The liquor store one, though, where they did the sketch.
Get off the bus with a bottle of Alizé and
a six-pack of Bartles and James. Yeah.
Exactly.
Excellent.
This is a fun time. So what you been up to anyway, Big Dave?
Why talk about wrestling when we can reminisce on, you know, the Lonely Island? Well, what's been going on? Got back from Vegas Sunday night after hanging out for All Elite Wrestling's Double or Nothing. And that was a tremendous time, as we're about to talk about. And otherwise, you know, just trying to keep up with pro wrestling. I mean, WWE keeps ramming this stuff down our throats, whether we like it or not, and you know, keep trying to watch that stuff and keep up with it. It's a full-time job almost. But
there's a whole Pornhub category for that. You know that, right?
I know.
Just checking.
They should sponsor WWE, you know. I can't wait for the next Extreme Rules sponsored by Pornhub. You know, that'd be great.
Extreme ramming.
Yeah.
Alexa Bliss just comes out with like her mascara streak down her cheeks.
Yeah, get Howard Finkel out there. This next match is a rim job match.
Well, let's just say it would give all new meaning to the Memorial Day sketch where the Usos and the Revival were playing cornhole.
Hey, there we go. This also plays into Big E's tweet. I'm not sure if you guys saw it, where he said that he wants to go into creative and talk about making the third hour just live streaming erotica. And then after a while, he just goes, I thought that was edgy, but no, that's edging. Oh, sorry. I misunderstood.
Oh, boy.
You know, they probably get better ratings at third they hour probably if they would. Did that. You know,
Big E is amazing on Twitter. Like, his Twitter game is, like, the best. I can't even rank it.
Just put Big E on for the last hour. Let him talk for a while. I mean, that would probably improve ratings.
Dude, I want Big E's Twitter game in the Tokyo Dome. That's like 8 stars right there.
8-star match.
Him just typing away on Twitter. But okay, so Mr. Moderator, you want to get this show on the road? Big Dave has some things to talk about from the live perspective, and I think that's our first topic, right?
It is. And before we get to that, make sure you head over on to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Check out all the new chair shot designs. And speaking of that,
thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
All right, gentlemen. All Elite Wrestling, Double or Nothing. Lay it out there for me. Big Dave, you were there. I mean, This was a very special event, and people kind of got something that they were hoping they were going to get when it was all said and done. In my opinion, that's kind of what I take away. Also, from all honesty, not having seen it yet, what was said to be a very excellent show.
You used a word right there that, as hokey as this may sound, as far as pro wrestling fans and podcasters like us, all of us have been doing this for a long time, the word hope is a big part of what Double or Nothing was, because a lot of people who I listened to coming out of that event were very hopeful about the industry, very hopeful about this promotion, had seen a show that they didn't leave feeling deflated. Like, as you hear that complaint so many times at WWE pay-per-views, I mean, I've been to We've all been to tons of them. And you leave there just with this kind of sinking feeling like, yeah, God damn, that was not what I was expecting. And it didn't end the way I wanted it to. People, everybody left Double or Nothing very high, saying that, you know, God, you know, they don't do events like that anymore. That was really everything I was looking for. So from a live perspective, I would say that it was like, if you've ever been to like a takeover event, it was very similar to that, probably maybe ratcheted up a bit more. And takeover crowds are really rowdy. This was a little bit more. These guys, people were hot from the very first, the Battle Royal all the way to, you know, John Moxley, Dirty Deeds, Kenny Omega on the top of the poker chips. And then, I mean, there's stuff that happened afterwards that I know Greg didn't like it, but I didn't have a problem where they all kind of came out. Kenny broke his nose early in that match with Jericho. I mean, a shoot broke a nose and fought through that whole thing. And then they kind of like, the Bucks kind of had to help steady him, and they kind of thanked everybody for everything that had happened and for making it an actual thing. But I thought, you know, the event was really, really, really good. I don't think it was perfect. My wife gave it a perfect 10. And I think it's important to comment on that for a moment, because my wife is a casual fan. Now, yes, she's far more knowledgeable about the industry because, well, she's lived with me for the history of the Attitude of Aggression podcast. She's been around Old Gator before, which is an experience in and of itself. Fuck you, Velveteen Dream. The Old Gator experience was the real experience, as Tunney can attest.
True story.
You know, she's been around this industry for many years. She's seen a lot. She knows what she likes. She thought it was a perfect show. And in her words, it's like there just wasn't any BS. It wasn't any downtime. It was just, you know, good matches the whole way through, action the whole way through. And I agree with her to a large extent. I can't give it a perfect score. I couldn't do that. I mean, I think that the women's match left a lot to be desired. The AEW's women's roster is no competition to WWE's right now, nor is it going to be for a long time. But other than that, I mean, yeah, the men, Dustin and Cody was simply fantastic. The Omega and Jericho was really good. The Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers was excellent as well. There were, I mean, even like they brought out like, the Japanese girls who came out, who I had no idea who these people were, but they just absolutely stole a lot of the show. I mean, not stole the whole thing, but my wife and I was like, what is going on? What is this stuff? And by the time that was over, it was, they'd sold us on the whole thing. So it was a tremendous event, a great pay-per-view in the short term, a magnificent pay-per-view. I think in the long term, the best thing you can say about Double or Nothing, it was a great start for AEW. I mean, a great start. You couldn't have got a better start. But again, keep it in perspective. It's just a start. They're just getting going. They lived up to the hype. They delivered on what they wanted to deliver. And you really, that's all you could ask for them from that event. But yeah, live, it was an electric, super electric atmosphere. Lots of people very excited about the future of AEW. And, you know, even if they don't want to admit it, the future of pro wrestling in general.
That was really well put, Dave. Because it's just
A half drink in, man. Only a half.
Hey,
drink
that's
in.
Nice. Good job. So it only gets better from here, is what you're saying.
I got to keep drinking.
All right, there we go.
Keep drinking. Hallelujah.
But even watching the show, you could tell that the crowd was electric. Like they responded. I think the best thing that I could say is they responded, well, quote unquote, correctly to everything that went on. Like, nobody was trying to get themselves over, and that could be because they just weren't frustrated, disgruntled, disenfranchised, whatever word you want to use that describes the average WWE fan. But they were hot, they responded well. The only two bad looks, I guess, from watching on TV, basically, was A, the bad three count from the Joshi match, where they rang the bell before the match was actually over, and then all the girls just stopped, and you saw like Yuka and the other ones on the outside like pop their head over the ring like lemurs, and they're just like, no, two, what the fuck?
And the crowd got on them real quick for that.
Oh, they did. That was really nice. And the other thing was the complete no sell or repackage, whatever you want to call, of the Super Smash Brothers, because you obviously can't call them that if they're going to be on TNT, because that Nintendo owns that name, because it's been their video game series for like 20 years. But they didn't give them a name. They didn't give them anything. They're just like, hey, it's these guys, and now they have minions, and they're beating the shit out of everybody and using them as a seat. Wow.
I had to ask Greg who they were. I was like, who are these guys? I'm not sure. And I think there were like half of the people there in the audience that night. They kind of shared the same sentiment. They're like, my wife's like, who are these guys? I'm like, I have no idea who they are. But a lot of, and you know, you're going to get that with AEW as they introduce some people. There are, you know, people in the Battle Royal who you weren't quite sure. Well, who is this? And that sort of thing. And that's okay. You know, get those people out there, get them some exposure, get them established. But yeah, like you said, Andrew, the crowd responded appropriately. The "this is awesome" chants were few and far between, and they weren't just thrown out there for the sake of throwing it out there. Like you said, for a crowd trying to get itself over. When they chanted that, it was because they really believed that, and it was genuine. And that's kind of refreshing because, I mean, we've all been to WWE events where they're just chanting, "this is awesome" from the first collar and elbow tie-up of a match. You're like, give me a break. You guys are just trying to get yourself over, and that's all that this is. There wasn't any of that in this show. They were cheering appropriately for what they wanted to. Dustin really in the match with Cody, the crowd was red hot for Cody at the beginning, especially after the thing with the Triple H symbolic throne, that sort of thing. And then Dustin won them over as the match went along. And there was a chant, you know, people were chanting, "you still got it." And then there was a chant that I don't think I've ever heard at an event. I don't know if it came across on the pay-per-view broadcast, but they chanted "never lost it." And I don't think I've heard that one before. That was creative.
Yeah, that was kind of creative. Never heard that one before either myself.
Never lost it. You know, the first AE dub chant that came across, that kind of was cool when I realized, oh, they're doing the EC dub thing, but it's AE dub. A lot to like about that event. It was very well done. Moxley's appearance at the end was, you knew they were going to do something. They were holding something back. And I'll be honest with you guys, for the slightest of moments there, when he came through the crowd, I thought it was CM Punk for a split second. You know, you couldn't see well what was going on and his hairstyle. And you're like, oh shit. You know, and I think somebody next to me had said something like Punk. And I was like, wait, what? And then you realize it was Moxley, which was just as good. Well, yeah, not just Punk, as good, but pretty good.
Punk's working under a mask again, so.
Well, I mean, you may see him at All Out, or yeah, All Out is. I mean, if they're going to make a big splash and they're going to be in his hometown, then I don't know.
If I was smart, I would have seen him down the road from my house about a month ago.
There you go.
Oh, that was the one that Aesop was at where he came out in the mask?
Yep, that was him. I can tell you it was him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think Aesop confirmed that anyway. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, like the show was really, really good. I think honestly, since, you know, it's wrestling and it's a website, so we have to grade things. I think I gave it an 8.5 out of 10 because there were some things that I didn't like. It was still done really, really well. Don't get me wrong, but also grading it like 10 out of 10 as their first show, there's no growth. There's nowhere to kind of continue to go.
All downhill from there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not good. So maybe I nitpicked a little bit, maybe this or that, but that's still not a bad score. That's still better than most shows get, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's exactly what I would give it, is an 8.5 out of 10 as well. I mean, I told people it wasn't as good as NXT TakeOver New York. I don't think so. There was not a single match on the Double or Nothing card that had the emotion and just the swings of things that were going on as Gargano Cole at TakeOver New York. I stand by that. I mean, Cody and Dustin came close, but to me, Gargano and Cole was still the best match I've seen this year. So NXT TakeOver New York to me was the first perfect score I ever gave a card. And this was really, really, really good, but it wasn't that good. I know that'll piss some of the marks off out there who are just, you know, AEW is the greatest thing ever. And anything that WWE's ever done under any umbrella has just sucked. You're wrong. So, you know, that sort of thing, but it was a great show. Like I said, I really think if you were to ask Cody or Chris or any of these guys, Matt, Nick, any of them, Tony, they'd say, yeah, it's a great start. And now let's build on that. So
let me finish this topic by asking you guys one last question that you can kind of answer quickly, kind of wrap this thing up in a bow. Andrew, you watched it on TV. Dave, you were there live. How did it feel watching on TV? How did it feel watching live? As in, did it feel like a WWE show? Did it feel like an old WCW show? Did it feel more like an ECW show? Was it more of like a cross between a TNA and a New Japan show? Did it feel new Ring of Honor-ish? I hope you're understanding the question I'm trying to ask here. I want you to associate or combine a couple different and tell me how it felt being there live and being able to watch it, the live broadcast. So I think we'll start with Andrew, the live broadcast, and let Dave wrap it up with how he felt when he was there watching live.
Okay, live broadcast-wise, it's a good question. I give it a combination of TNA, probably circa 2010 when they were going for their Monday Night War 2.0, and New Japan. Because the way they paced everything out was very action-heavy, and then whenever they didn't have action and it was the unveiling of a belt or the symbolic throne thing, there was pageantry to it, like the Japanese style. So anything that didn't have ramifications in the match still kind of had significance for the company or for the overall prestige, mystique of whatever was going on. So I'd say some weird like combination of TNA and New Japan.
For me, I'd say it was very much like a takeover, an NXT takeover, extremely like an NXT takeover, not a main roster pay-per-view at all. There's nothing really about this that felt WWE, you know, WWE proper, I guess, to the main roster, Raw and SmackDown. It felt very much like a takeover. The crowd was very much like a takeover. They were rabid. They were engaged. They were emotionally fired up. So, I mean, if you've ever been to a takeover, I've been to three of them now, Takeover Dallas, War Games 2, and then New Orleans actually came before that. Those crowds are some of the most boisterous and engaged that you'll ever get. So it felt like that, but I do think Andrew's right. There's some tinges of NJPW thrown in there. There was some different pageantry. The entrances that Jericho did, that, you know, the different phases of Jericho, that sort of thing. That was a little bit, I mean, well, I say it's very NJPW-ish, but it's also NXT-ish because NXT has done a lot of the grandiose entrances like Bobby Roode and Shinsuke Nakamura and that sort of thing. So to me, it was like, yeah, takeover, amplify that about a half step. And that's what it really felt live. That's what it felt like to me, a very takeover-ish, not a WWE thing, but an NXT takeover crowd with a little extra something to it.
All right. Well answered. Well wrapped up. Balls, you're officially in charge tonight. Sir, do I have permission to move on to the next topic?
No, we're not doing the next topic.
No next topic? We're not going to do another topic?
I don't know. What, you expected me to say no? Come on. Yes, let's go to the next topic. Why don't we?
I'd much rather hold all of you accountable for your crap. Quite frankly, you could ask me anything. You could have asked me about AEW.
Oh, so Sami Zayn. Let's play off of All Elite here as we compared it to some things around. WWE is some things around, and we got some things to talk about with WWE. Let's start right here. Sami Zayn. This was in the electric chair hosted by Corey Graves, and I doubt we'll have another one because they threw that fucking thing out of the ring and broke it, so it didn't seem like we're going to have another electric chair.
Stupid-ass name.
Although, I got to tell you, in the old wrestling video games, I'd always have one of my guys' moves be the old electric chair drop. Anyway, Andrew Belaz. You and I kind of talked about this little pre-show. What were your initial thoughts on him doing this? And the whole debate is, was it run past WWE brass beforehand or not?
Well, the beauty of first blush was that 9 times out of 10, we always assume WWE did this on purpose. They know what they're doing. They have everything under the thumb. It's all under control. However, we have a couple connections that we use for the wonderful Big Boss Man for, you know, the chair shot. And he has good information that it actually wasn't run past the WWE brass. And I think that's actually just more perfect for Sammy's character, to be honest. Because if he's the critic of the critics, if all the critics are saying AEW did this and now WWE has to respond because now it's Monday Night War all over again and you guys are fucked and dead in the water, why wouldn't the critic of the critics throw that in their face and be like, you know, three or four people had a chance to ask me a question and nobody asked the obvious question. Like, what the fuck? So it was clever of Sammy to do that. Granted, yes, acknowledging competition on, you know, television is never good because it's like free advertising. So there may be some ramifications, but he wasn't going to go to Saudi Arabia anyway. So it's not like it's going to affect him soonish. But I don't know, because it's really, really clever for the character. And that's the part that it's really just catching me the most, is that if he's the critic of the critics, why would he not want to talk about that? Or why would he not expect the marks to ask him about AEW so he can just shoot it back down? So I thought it was just a clever angle. And now that we know it wasn't something that WWE gave the thumbs up on, that's just, it's interesting. And that's the beauty of the whole AEW situation that's popped up over the last few days. First show being really, really good, capturing everybody's imagination, just makes it interesting to be a wrestling fan. Are they technically competition yet? No, they've run one show. They're not even on TV yet. Let's calm down with, you know, crowning them as, you know, the successor to WWE, WCW, whatever the hell you want to put it. But it's just so goddamn interesting. What do you think, Dave?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know whether Sammy had to go ahead to do that or not. I lean in the direction of thinking that, yeah, he did, that maybe it was like Vince saying, you know what? I'm not even going to run from these assholes. I'm just going to come right out and say, okay, yeah, you guys had one great show. Fantastic. I'll give you Smarks a moment here. I'll actually even acknowledge him. I'm not going to Voldemort these guys and, oh, the promotion that shall not be named, that sort of thing. You know, he just came out and said, yeah, fine, AEW exists, and now it's business as usual. Because, yeah, like you're saying, a lot of people thought there'd be an immediate response, like Seth Rollins is going to come out in the opening match of Raw on Monday Night and Blade, you know, something like that, just to kind of, you know, it was like, it's not going to happen. That's not how this is going to work. But, I part of me just thinks it was scripted, and Vince kind of just let Sammy go with it. But you're right. It is very interesting. It's a very interesting time. You know, AEW is not competition. They're still a very good alternative right now. They had one great show. But like you said, Andrew, you know, what happens when the novelty of blood and pal drivers wears off, once they're on weekly television and people get used to seeing this stuff again? And you know, are they going to be able to maintain that momentum and keep that thing going like WWE has done for 55 damn years and that sort of thing? So it's a fascinating time to be a pro wrestling fan. There's a lot of opportunities as to, my dogs are even upset about it. You guys be quiet down there. You're interrupting Pot is War.
It's not as bad as Dan's cat, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, Dan's cats. Just the specter of AEW right now is something that WWE can use to their advantage, you know, and they can play this up and just kind of have some fun with it a little bit, because, you know, Vince is kind of playing with house money a little bit here. He's like, all right, these guys really knocked it out of the park. I'll give it to them. But now we're not going to see anything from them for the next 2 months, because until Fight for the Fallen takes place, really, what are they going to be doing except bolstering the roster? Now, look, you know, if Sasha Banks shows up there or something like that, then you've got some things to talk about. But that's not going to happen. But I like you said, Andrew, it's a fascinating time. They're not direct competition yet. They might be. But at this point in time, it's just very interesting to see what's going to happen next. And I like what Sammy did, whether it was scripted or not. He delivered it well. And even the shock face he made, oh, did you hear what I just said? You know, people are like, and the internet lost their shit about this thing. And I mean, it was great. So, you know, that's about the best response that Vince acknowledged your existence. It's like Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black, that match where all he wanted was for Aleister to say his name.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's what AEW got that from Vince. Vince said their name on Monday Night Raw. That's got to be considered a victory in their book. You know, even if it's not going to hashtag change the world, but it's still.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, thank you. But it's still a win for AEW. They had a very strong opening few days here.
They did. And I think the funniest part to this whole AEW WWE argument is when people actually use TNA as a factor in this whole situation, and they go, well, TNA kind of had the same model. TNA did basically the same thing. AEW's TNA all over again. Why didn't TNA succeed? And aside from social media not being where it is, there's another really, really important point that people forget. When TNA started in, what, like 03, 04, that was still Ruthless Aggression era. People still liked WWE at that time. Like, there was no need for an alternative because you had all the WCW talent that people weren't used to seeing, and the storylines were still exciting enough. Things didn't really start to fall off until when TNA tried to challenge them with Hogan and Bischoff, and at that point that they just bit off too much and then just kind of floundered and died in the water, in a sense. So the jump off, the starting point, isn't really the same, because we're kind of back at like 1991 WWE, where they pander to the kids, it's kind of hard to swallow at times, and the hardcore fans are a little disgruntled. So WCW came in with the more realistic product, and that's what AEW is kind of presenting. TNA, just, I guess, wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, TNA, there's a big difference. I mean, a big difference between AEW and TNA is you look at the core of the two groups at the time. I mean, yeah, TNA scored a coup by getting Angle when he was still, you know, not the Kurt Angle we saw at the end of his career here, but too much of it was still running, or a lot of it was still running through guys like Sting and Hogan and even Flair to a certain extent. And that got tired real quick. Yes, they had money. They had financial backing, probably not the same kind of backing that AEW has. The cons have a little bit more money than whatever was going on with Impact at the beginning of this whole thing. But, you know, AEW has some really recognizable names at the hardcores, you know, like the Codys, the Bucks, Kenny Omega, the Bucks, and the Elite have branded themselves going into this thing. So they have a big advantage that nobody in TNA really, well, I mean, I guess you could say kind of had that, but not to this extent, where they were AEW is really an offshoot of this homegrown movement that the Elite set up. But, you know, getting back to what you said about WWE, Andrew, you know, their biggest problem, and as it's been for since they went public, is they just serve too many masters. And It's awfully hard to satisfy that many different demographics and aspects, because you've got the kids who want to worship the superheroes like John Cena and Roman Reigns, and that's great. Not taking anything away, the Make-A-Wish stuff that WWE has done is beyond compare, and AEW hasn't even thought about that yet. They're going to have to at some point in time, probably. But, you know, they're catering to the kids, and when you cater the kids, then the hardcores get pissed off. And then when you have like the hardcore, when you cater the hardcores and you have a match that's a little bit more aggressive, and God forbid somebody actually bleeds, then you get the mothers and the parents are all pissed off. Well, my kids are going to have nightmares about this. And, you know, and I don't envy Vince or Hunter or anybody in WWE to try and satisfy all those different. And then on top of that, you got a board of directors, you got shareholders who want dividends and profits and bottom line. It's an unenviable job, and something that a lot of the people out there who are so critical of WWE just don't get. That, look, they are in a no-win situation. And that's why I think NXT is a good, it's like a safe harbor for them. Hey, look, you hardcore fans, go watch TakeOver. Go watch NXT. I guarantee you, you'll be satisfied. Even go watch 205 Live. You'll be happy about that. The main roster is it is what it is. I mean, I don't think you're going to see, I don't think you're going to see an overt response on Raw or SmackDown anytime soon. I just don't think. I mean, until, you know, as long as their ratings, yeah, it's struggling by their own standards, but by cable standards, they're still doing very well. So I don't think you're going to see anything major. What's up, Tony?
I just wanted to hit 2 points really quick that you guys have brought up some really interesting stuff here in the past few minutes. And one is, you talk about TNA and All Elite. I think the advantage that All Elite has is their main group of people, and what's driving this is you don't really associate any of them specifically, at least, with WWE. The Bucks, not at all. Omega, not at all. Jericho, now being an All Elite, doesn't necessarily have to associate with WWE. He has this, New Japan, and WCW. Cody Rhodes didn't come from WWE. Cody Rhodes came from Dusty Rhodes, period, end of story, bottom line right there. And you talk about WWE serving too many masters. Well, they might have acquired the ultimate master that might allow them to do whatever the hell they need to do to go back and be number one, especially if that involves adding more Attitude Era things, which we've kind of seen a little bit of a pickup lately, and that being Fox, kind of to what you've mentioned, Dave. Those are just the two things that have ran through my mind as you guys have had this excellent discussion the past couple minutes.
Yeah, the product's been more physical lately. They've upped the ante on the physicality. You know, I mean, give it time. I mean, it's the first week that AEW's been in existence. Yeah, I didn't expect a massive, you know, I didn't expect Vince to come out at the beginning of Monday Night Raw and say, you know, we got to change things up and it's going to be Attitude Era 2.0. You know, he wasn't going to do that. You know, they haven't lost 83 weeks in a row. They lose 83 weeks in a row. Okay, then you'll see something. But until then, yeah, I mean, any changes I think are going to be subtle. You won't see them now. You may see it this weekend with the topic we're going to talk about a little bit later on. You may see something with NXT just because that, well, we'll talk about that when we get there. I got some thoughts about that.
Well, then, since we should probably get towards that, let's get through question number three. And do we want to take a pause for the cause, Mr. Tunney?
Oh, well, yes. Why don't we just bring in Lord Alfred?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is PC Tunney, and I am the advocate for the administration that allocates alliteration all across America, and I would like to proudly present to you Boom Box Brock Beast Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar!
I gotta tell you, I haven't enjoyed a new iteration of a character any more than Brock Lesnar going out and having fun and doing some stuff and smiling and dancing. You can shit on it all you want, the booking and the storyline, but I'll be honest with you. As someone who's watched WWE since WrestleMania's begun, I've thoroughly enjoyed Brock Lesnar. Gentlemen, your thoughts overall on Brock Lesnar holding the Money in the Bank title or the briefcase and his whole boombox Brock gimmick?
It's clever. I mean, I'll give him that much. He's not just using it as a briefcase. He's using it as something else. And who would have thought that it just, you know, probably dawned or spurred from him just walking out pretending it was a briefcase. And it was just entertaining as hell. And I think aside from just the boomboxing and him dancing and all that other stuff, the part I loved the most from this past Raw, at least, was him not understanding how the Money in the Bank contract worked. And him having that little comedic moment back and forth with Paul Heyman. Like, wait, I have a year? Wait, whoa. Why didn't you tell me that? He's like, how do you not know? It's like the Money in the Bank's been a thing for a while. So between him looking like he's having fun, which is another big tie-in that, you know, I had with, well, on SmackDown. Like, at the end, you saw Roman and R-Truth were just smiling from ear to ear after what happened there. So Brock is having fun. Brock is on television, so you can't really complain about him not being there. And it's clever enough. It even invented a shirt with the Brock Party thing with the Money in the Bank boombox briefcase. So I'm not against it. I mean, it's Money in the Bank, so we don't know when he's going to cash it and he's going to do his own thing. But it's been entertaining so far. Do you disagree, Dave?
No. I mean, Brock Lesnar has gotten such a bad rap because A, he's not around that much. He shows up to Raw about as often as I put out podcast episodes lately, which isn't saying a whole lot, but, he's, hey, at least I can poke fun at myself, but,
self-deprecating humor is nice.
Exactly. But no, I mean, Brock, you know, he's just got this thing. All he does is he stand in the ring, look menacing and let Paul Heyman do all his work for him. And this was anything but that. He comes out, he's dancing, He's entertaining. He's laughing. He's smiling. He's feigning ignorance about the terms of the Money in the Bank and how that works. And this is very out of character for Brock Lesnar. So he's your biggest draw in WWE. Whether the fans, the hardcores want to admit that or not, it's Brock Lesnar's world. We're all just living in it. And he comes out there. He gets ratings. Greg posted some numbers, or he was saying something about the number of YouTube views that his not understanding the Money in the Bank fine print has garnered. I mean, that right there says volumes about just the draw that is Brock Lesnar. People don't want him with the title, but they still want to see him. Mm-hmm. And that's very powerful. And I think, you know, adding a new layer to his character, I mean, the next thing you know, Andrew, they're going to start, you know, his next match won't be all German suplexes and an F5. You know, maybe he'll throw in a few holds. He might even try a shooting star press. That didn't go so well.
Yeah, let's not see that again.
Let's not see that again. But I think anything you add some diversity to Brock Lesnar's character, you add some layers to that, make him funny, make him more engaging, have people look at him and say, wow, I've never seen this version of Brock Lesnar. How is that bad? How can anybody say that's a bad thing when he's probably the most over thing you have going on either Raw or SmackDown? So, yeah, add something to it. Make it a little bit more fun. Make it different. Shake it up a little bit. I thought I was like you guys. I thought it was very entertaining. It was fun. And pro wrestling is still supposed to be fun. It can be as serious as you want it to be, like Double or Nothing was. But it's still supposed to be fun. And I thought that was a really fun segment.
Double or Nothing
was fun too. Come on,
it was, but a different kind of fun. So
should the more they raise Brock's character up on the fun scale, the more they lower his entertainment in the ring? Like, why don't you just turn him into what he actually really completely is, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and just have him make the boringest fucking matches out of wrestling these people? And it's not entertaining to anybody because he's just ragdolling and spinning on him and holding him down. But he's laughing the whole time and boomboxing Brock the whole time. What do you guys think about that? Well, I mean, he continued to do that. I mean, like actual matches, though.
The part that's going to amuse me, since we're still kind of going to thread Double or Nothing through all this, how much everybody loved the Joshi match. And yet people are torn on the Brock Lesnar thing. And here's the reason, Tunny, because I know you're just rolling your eyes because I had to bring Japanese stuff back into it. But you had the Yuka Sakazaki, the magical girl, try to distract, you know, Hikaru Shida by pointing at the sky and screaming UFO. And then that didn't work. And then you had Emi Sakura come out dressed out like Freddie Mercury and literally did a stomp kind of "We Will Rock You" chant to try to get the crowd behind her. So people loved the characterization of the little magical girl in genie pants and the Freddie Mercury cosplayer, and everybody loves Leva Bates when she does her cosplay stuff. And yet Brock Lesnar, you know, doing boomboxing and like, if he comes in next week with like a thing of cardboard and challenges people to like a breakdance kind of thing, I will laugh my ass off. I'll think that is the fucking best thing ever. But if people hate Brock for what he's doing, yet they praise, you know, the Joshi girls from Double or Nothing, that's just hypocritical. And yes, we know the IWC is hypocritical within itself, but that's a very easy one-to-one where you go, how can you hate him for this when it's the same fucking thing? Dave? You have anything you want to add?
I think we lost Dave momentarily.
It looks like his screen just froze at the wrong point.
He's like, oh shit, what's coming? Unless something came in, maybe his wife came in and just smacked him.
She just knocked out the modem, just died or something. Oh, there he is.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it just dropped me off there.
Oh no, she's there. Now we got implications.
Oh no.
You want to get on in on this, babe? We're just talking about all sorts of stuff, hon. No, we're not talking about sex. But I guess that
can
more...
be if you want to.
Yeah, we
let's
can
talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. That was for Chris Platt because he's always singing right here.
Now, don't steal his gimmick. Dave, did you hear what I was saying between the Joshi girls and Brock and doing the personality thing?
Yeah. I heard a part about where Brock shows up with cardboard and starts breakdancing. The only thing that would make that better is if the Doctor of Thugonomics shows up and joins in with him. You know?
And R-Truth and Carmella.
Yeah. Dance break with the doctor of Thugonomics. You know, I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me. That sort of thing. So,
I don't know about forcing. I don't know about forcing anybody to feel anything, but I'll tell you what, I can give you a dance break.
Fantastic.
So I guess, you know, real quick way to just sum this up. What do we like more? Boombox Brock or Sombrero Brock?
I like Boombox Brock. A, it's harder to pronounce without getting yourself all screwed up. And I just thought it was more entertaining.
It's almost as hard as to pronounce as Butt Chug Jug.
Another John Cena reference? We got also that's two.
It's just salt water, so it's okay. It's easy to butt chug.
Oh, that's an Andrew Velez reference.
Yeah, he's play it. I butt chug salt water all the time. But no, Tony, honestly, Sombrero or Boombox?
Oh, Boombox is phenomenal. And the fact that they turned that fucking thing into a boombox is awesome. You know they're gonna sell those. It's all a marketing thing. You can go on and buy your very own boombox Money in the Bank, and it actually fucking has AM/FM radio, Bluetooth capability, etc.
I'll buy it.
I might too. That actually sounds kind of cool.
Well, I know Vince is listening to me every time I do a podcast anywhere. So, yeah, all the time, the time.
If Vince listens to this, PC Tunney can be reached at PCTunney@gmail. Oh, anyway.
No, he's been stealing my ideas anyway. He doesn't even bother.
He doesn't respond.
He doesn't do anything. He just goes on and continues to make a phenomenal product that I will continue to watch.
All right. I like how you turned it from salty to overly positive. Like, the power of positivity has just hit you like the New Day showed up. So that's good. So let's take that positivity and roll it into this anniversary show that we got coming up at the end of this week.
Ooh.
Gentlemen, I can't believe it's already the 25th takeover. I got 5 matches on the card here from what I sent out for the Chair Shot staff picks. Make sure you check that out this Friday afternoon right there on thechairshot.com. You will have Big Dave's predictions. You will have Andrew Belaz's predictions among all the other Chair Shot staff. Matt Riddle, Roddy Strong, Undisputed Era, Street Profits, Forgotten Sons, Lorcan and Birch, they're fighting for that vacant NXT tag titles. Got Velveteen Dream against Tyler Breeze. I think that's my most anticipated match on this card. I think Tyler Breeze is going to show some people some stuff. We got Shayna and Io for that women's championship. And of course, you heard it, Johnny Gargano defending against Adam Cole, baby. Big Dave, talk to me about this card. NXT. I mean, shit, it's going to be great, right?
it's going to be beyond great. If there's going to be, like I said earlier, if there's going to be a response from WWE to Double or Nothing, this is it. And the NXT takeovers are, there's never been a bad one as far as I can recall. In fact, I'd say 95% of them have been great to ridiculously great. And the other 5% have been just really damn good. I don't think I've ever seen an average takeover. That NXT roster is, you know, whatever the main roster's complacency is with their position or whatever they, you know, they're limited by what Vince does. The NXT roster does not have those same constraints because it's predominantly Triple H who lets these guys go. And if you think for one second that guys like Gargano and Cole and Velveteen Dream and Tyler Breeze and Matt Riddle, of all people, didn't watch Double or Nothing and say, damn, these guys really brought it. Okay, I'll take that challenge, and now we're going to just knock it the fuck out of the park. You got another thing coming, because I think this takeover is going to be, it'll be a very loud response without ever mentioning AEW by name, but I think these guys are really going to come out and guys and girls are going to come out and really deliver something extra special. I mean, they're all special, and I know that that might be hyperbole on my part to say this is going to be really something special, but I just have a feeling that the response is coming Saturday night from NXT, and it's going to be a very in-your-face response. Yeah, like I said, that NXT roster doesn't have to take a back step to anybody in AEW, and I think you're going to see that Saturday.
That's a really good way to put it. it's hard to really argue with anything you said right there, because NXT is usually really good to great. I mean, I know some things have, you know, hit everybody a little differently. There's one show that you probably like least of the other ones, whatever, but nothing has ever been awful or average, like you said. So that's kind of like playing with house money when it comes to takeovers. Like, even a quote-unquote bad takeover is still above average or still pretty good. It's just, you know, it fell short of the bar that NXT has already put, like, really, really, really high. So I'm excited for Breeze and Dream, because that can go so many different ways. It's not possible. For all we know, it could turn into Zoolander 3, and they could just do a pose off or do like a runway model thing, and just, it could be comedy for like the first half, and then we can actually get real wrestling. Like, you just don't know with those two, and it's wonderful because they're great character wrestlers, and they can go in the ring as well. So that's just hit me with the blue steel, Tony.
Blue steel.
Thank you. But obviously, the one match that I'm most excited for is Shayna Baszler and Io Shirai. Not just because Io Shirai is Japanese, but because Io really hasn't been able to show a lot of why people heralded her as the best thing to come out of Japan, why she was Stardom's ace for so long. And she's kind of been lackluster, a little average. Like, she's got a nice moonsault, but like Mae Young Classic, she didn't have great blowaway matches. She didn't have like anything really crazy so far on NXT. And when she was tagged with Kairi, they didn't exactly put in like the work rate that a lot of the hardcore fans like, or she didn't do certain aspects that she's known for back in Stardom. So I'm expecting Shayna to get a really good match out of her, and Shayna to be probably called up after this, because Shayna's been in there a while and she's pushing 40, so you would think Shayna has to hit the main roster soon. And the one that I'm the most concerned about, which Big Dave, you can weigh in to see how you feel about it, but that triple threat tag match is weird to me, because I feel like it's going to be a lot of Undisputed Era trying to carry the match, because Street Profits are athletic, but they're a little green. And Forgotten Sons kind of do that brawly biker kind of style, mm-hmm. and it doesn't always, you know, correlate well in a match.
Yeah, and Lorcan and Birch. I mean, Oni's on 205 Live, so you know they're not going to win because they don't want to. I mean, I guess it's possible, but yeah, I think Undisputed Era carries that. I mean, an Undisputed Era has been an enigma to themselves the past, what, since TakeOver New York. Mm-hmm. Are they united? Are they not united? No one knows. But I think I agree with you. I think Io Shirai, because Shayna right now is kind of getting, remember when Samoa Joe had the title in NXT and mm-hmm. you kept waiting for him to get brought up? This is the time. Nope, he won. This is the time. Oh, not only did he win, he's a 2-time NXT champion.
Yeah.
And you just started wait, when are they actually going to bring him up? When are they going to bring him up? And he just kept, and it never happened. And now Shayna's kind of like, I thought they'd bring her up after New York. That would have been a good time to get her involved. I think you're right. She's 40. There is a void that she can fill. The Ronda Rousey absence is felt pretty largely amongst the women's division. Sasha's gone. We don't know what her status is. But, yeah, you get Shayna Baszler involved, have her go up against Becky Lynch, and now you've got something to talk about. And, no, she's not Ronda, and, no, she doesn't have Ronda's looks, and she doesn't have Ronda's charisma. That's okay. She's got a lot of Ronda's skill set, and so I think she would transfer over. And she has gotten better on the mic, and everything she's done the past year has improved drastically since she won the title in New Orleans that first time. So I tend to agree with you. This is Io's time to shine. Get the title on her, bring her up, or bring Shayna up, and let her run with this thing for a while. I think Gargano and Cole, I'm really excited about, although after that match in New York, I'm not sure what story they still have left to tell, but I'm sure they'll figure out something and take my money as we watch it go down, because I won't, complain about it. But like Tony says, Tyler Breeze and Velveteen Dream is really, really interesting to me because it is the first time, I think, that I can recall that they brought somebody up from NXT and then sent him back down to try and see if, hey, maybe we can get a better use of this guy. And so this is important. If Breeze is successful, he doesn't even have to win the title. And I don't think he will, but he doesn't have to. But if he puts on a good match and people respond to them, then it opens the door for guys like maybe you send a Sami Zayn back to NXT every so often, or you send some of these other, these guys are just going crazy.
They don't like the fact that they, well, listen, you bring up shit like Sami Zayn going back to NXT and they aren't having it. Those dogs aren't having that. They said, no, they don't like that idea.
AEW.
So, I like, oh, Sami. Yeah, oh, there's
just the way they
All right. I think we got an idea for topic number five. I have an idea for topic number five. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I thought you were going to say you have an idea for a title, Tony.
Oh, I did. I made a title already today when I was playing WWE 2K19. So,
what did you make?
I made the Extreme Championship title because it was defended in no disqualification matches. I only had four options for my match. You played the game, right?
Oh, my universe mode is far better than anything on WWE right now, or AEW for that matter.
Yeah. No, I made a really nice Extreme Rules belt, and it's defended in no DQ matches, and it had the Extreme Rules logo on the belt and everything. So yeah.
Oh, very nice. I like downloading the NJPW and AEW arenas and putting WWE guys in there and just looking and say, yeah, that looks like it would work.
It usually does. Wrestle Kingdom
with 2K19 stuff all over the place, you know?
Well, I mean, it usually does if you think about the people that it has worked for. I mean, Hulk and Brock and...
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and if you think about it, Dominion's got two people that you could kind of already play with that. You just have to create a couple characters because, let's see, Moxley's facing Juice. I'm pretty sure you guys heard that one, that Moxley's going to be on New Japan's Dominion show. And Jericho's got Okada. So that... out of those four people, three of them are former WWE. So, good. I mean,
they're all in my universe mode already.
Oh, you got an Okada?
Yeah, I got Okada, and I've got Juice Robinson. It's no big deal. Like the old days, where you had to create them yourself, and it always would come out looking like, God, these assholes look like me, and it should look like Okada. But,
so
you know, it's like now with the community creations, it's simple. You just download what somebody else did that looks photorealistic almost.
Are
with their moveset and their finishers.
PS4? Nice. Yes.
Xbox One.
Ah, crikey. Otherwise I could have sent you the PC Tunny character.
Oh, I would have put you in immediately with like Andre the Giant or something, you know.
Yes. That would be my first choice for a tag team partner. Me and Stephanie McMahon have that in common.
Nah, but like I mean the universe mode is great because like on my Raw thing, it's like Hollywood Hogan versus Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe for the Universal Championship. Okay, that's better than anything we'll get this year. So I'll just go with that.
We could always get Hogan. Don't put that on
that's
us.
True. Right we there. Could. We could.
There might be another jam in the sand where they're just like, we want Hulk Hogan. So, oh God. Could
you imagine
him
to win?
Hogan versus Roman?
And Hulk wins the title.
All right. Let's bring it back in. Let's bring it back in. Let's close out because we can do whatever we want here. Once we get to topic five, let's close out the NXT takeover by giving everybody listening before they even read the chair shot staff picks one prediction on one match. And I'll start off with I think Tyler Breeze is going to free up Velveteen Dream to move on to better things, whether that's a main roster or the NXT title. I think Tyler Breeze is going to get his and win that North American title. That's my one prediction I'm going to give everybody right now. Andrew, I'm going to let Dave think a little bit here. He's the chin whiskers are being strugged here.
Well, amongst our talking, we already kind of went over the fact that it feels like it should be Io's time. So that feels like that'd be a cop out if I just said Io beating Shayna. So let me look at the card real quick, and I'll pick Gargano retaining over Cole, only because I have no clue what's going on with Undisputed Era. They could come up, they could disband, they could stay down there and just be the Four Horsemen NXT for a while. I don't know, but Cole winning doesn't really seem overly likely to me, so I like Gargano retaining.
You know, I think I am going to go in the direction of the Undisputed Era getting called up. It could be the night where they all lose and they all get called up, and I wouldn't be surprised at all. And if that's the case, okay, then you look at the tag team match and say, okay, out of the remaining three teams, Street Profits, Forgotten Sons, or Lorcan and Birch, who wins, who walks away with the NXT tag titles, I'm going to go out on a limb. This will be my official prediction on the chair shot thing. Forgotten Sons are going to win the NXT tag team championships. These guys, hey, look, they got to the finals of the Dusty Classic. They lost to Ricochet and Aleister Black. No shame in doing that. Jackson Ryker is a physical freaking specimen with that 1,000-mile stare of his. It looks like, literally, looks like death looking the other way at you. It's like, you know, I don't need to see you anymore, Jackson. Just turn away. That's cool. I just think, you know, the Street Profits would be fun. I just don't see them putting the belt on them. And Lorcan and Birch, it's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Forgotten Sons. They're going to pull this thing out, win the titles. Yeah, I think Gargano retains. I think Riddle certainly is going to beat Roderick Strong. All four of them come up. And that would be a Moxley talked about a paradigm shift on his promo. That'd be a pretty big shift in power on either Raw or Smack. Or I take that back. Both brands, because there will be wild carders. That's for sure.
True. Now, see, this brings up an interesting topic, which maybe one of you two know. Would that make Blake the first person to hold tag titles in NXT with two different teammates? Because him and Buddy Murphy held them before, and if he wins with the Suns, would he be the first to do that?
It has to be, because there's not a lot of NXT titles that even get won twice by anybody.
Yeah, I mean,
think about two-time NXT champion.
Neville and Corey had the titles, but I don't think Neville ever won it a second time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to put my podcast credibility on a limb here, and I'm going to fucking say, yeah, it would make him the first motherfucker ever.
Fuck 2019. Let's do this 1998 style where we're just going to assume and we don't have Google to actually fact check us. So if we all agree, that works, right?
Have you unanimously wrong opinion? So it must be right.
It's funny because you said 2019, and it reminded me of something I watched on Netflix. They have a laughing special on Netflix, and it's fucking hilarious. One of the best jokes on there was Sherry O'Terry popping out of the laughing wall and saying, in 2020, Barbara Walters can confidently say, this is 2020.
Jesus Christ. All right, well, go to question 5 off of that one. Holy fuck.
King of the transition.
Yeah, aren't you?
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Just when they think they got the answers, I change the questions.
Let's kick it, gentlemen. What's on your mind?
I was just thinking of the guy in the front row at Double or Nothing who looked exactly like Macho Man Randy Savage. That just popped into my head just now.
No, okay, so fantastic. Oh, perfect. So I have a question for you. In your mind, when you looked at that guy and you were like eyeing him up, you're checking everything out and his movements and everything, maybe you could hear him a little bit. Yeah, and you're just looking at him and you're like, Randy Savage. Oh yeah, were you in your head? Were you
Oh, I was like, oh yeah, look here, Jericho, you son of a bitch! I saw what you did to Omega, and now I'm coming after you. Yeah, the cream of the crop. Yeah, where's the bathroom? I'm constipated. Yeah, so you know that sort of thing. And
Omega ruined my wedding.
Got my vote.
Jesus! Wow. Okay.
That woke Andrew up. He's like, I didn't know we were going to get some Randy Savage invitations. Ooh, yeah.
No,
but
come on, Andrew, snap into it.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'll defer to you guys. That just something that popped in my head is remembering there was Jesus was also there. People started chanting for Jesus at one point. It was interesting.
I don't think I've ever heard
a Jesus chant at a live event before either.
Isn't Jesus everywhere?
Are we sure though? Chris Platt wasn't there?
Chris might have been in the Jesus outfit. That's true.
Hey, it's just we had to get Chris and his whole Jesus to the job reference over because that's his favorite shirt. He loves to always pimp whenever he does those segues for our wonderful pro wrestling tees store at prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot.
I'll say this about Vegas, man. When Mania comes there, which will probably be within the next 5 years at the latest, that's gonna be nuts. Because, I mean, if you think it's crazy enough for Double or Nothing, imagine multiplying that by about 50,000.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, and, you know, we drove by the Raiders Stadium. It's about 50% done, maybe.
50% How big done. Is that?
It's big. It'd probably be a good 75,000 when it's done. And it's going to be, it's literally on the other side of the strip from like the Mandalay Bay.
Damn.
So it's like right there. And it's just going to be, it's going to be insane. You got, and when they come there, you got the, you know, Raider Stadium for WrestleMania, whatever number it's going to be. Probably what 2021 should be LA. I'm thinking 2022, maybe Atlanta, Minneapolis, possibly New Orleans, maybe 23 is what I'm looking. They're going to go to Vegas, you know, or they may even do LA Vegas back to back. Who knows? They may want to maximize the new stadiums. But yeah, when they come to Vegas, I mean, New Orleans is great. Because you can walk everywhere, but Vegas is it's like New Orleans amplified by 3,000. Just the craziness that's going on there. And I wouldn't say that. I mean, New Orleans is pretty crazy. But just random thoughts about walking around there. Because I was there for WrestleMania 9 when Vegas was there, and that was crazy enough. This will be 30,000 times worse or better, depending on your perspective.
Well, true. Plus, you'll have all the indie shows to go along with everything for the entire week. So, if people all week just looking for wrestling and getting into God knows what, and you know, Chris's favorite Wale Mania is going to be there probably because apparently he takes that traveling wherever Mania is at. So, yeah, that sounds like that'd be a hell of an experience. Jeez.
And you got what the snake pits there, right, Tony? They got so you got Jake's presence, and who else runs that? D'Lo Brown and
Sin Bodhi.
Sin Bodhi also runs that thing. So you've got that element going on.
Well, T-Mobile Future Stars Arena. Is out of that too, right?
Yeah. Yep. T-Mobile Arena is a great place for shows. I've been there a couple times, and yeah, Vegas is going to be a huge spot for WrestleMania. I mean, LA will be cool, but LA will be like New York because they'll do Mania at the Rams Chargers Stadium, and then they'll throw Takeover and Raw back to Staples, which is as bad as it was in New York, not that I was there, but you know, getting across the bridge from Brooklyn to the Meadowlands, it's going to be a lot worse in Los Angeles because where the Rams Stadium is over by the Forum, the old Forum in Inglewood, and then Staples is downtown. That's a good 20 miles. That's LA traffic. Yeah, no thanks.
Listen. Yeah, that's probably as bad, if not a little worse than New York.
But I just thought of something. What if they do like take over at the Forum? That would be really cool.
That'd be pretty cool, actually. Hey, listen, I'm up here in Milwaukee going, can I get a Rumble or a Survivor Series? We got Fisurf. We got Fisurf Forum and the Miller Park. Jesus Christ. Let's go. He did the job just for Milwaukee.
I'm for it. Go for it, Tony.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You said
NXT
no right
take
away.
Take over Milwaukee. Let's do it.
No, the problem is all those other shows, there's no other places to go. There's not enough hotels here.
I think they should do WrestleMania at Lambeau Field. You know, it might be 20 degrees, but that's all right.
Okay. You know, now you're mocking me, you son of a bitch.
If they do something in LA, they could always use Anaheim.
They could.
The pond is, you know, there. You know, Disney's right there. Oh, especially when McMahon says his only competition is Disney and you never know. That could be some interesting thing that they might have for like an NXT maybe at the pond.
Yeah. And I mean, here's another thing. What are the odds that Disney buys WWE and AEW within the next 10 years? They're buying everything else.
I don't think AEW would make itself marketable enough for Disney. If they're going to continue, WWE, yeah. But if AEW is going to continue with the Attitude Era kind of style where it's blood and realism, that might deter Disney a little bit if they were to go on a buying spree for wrestling stuff like they are with everything else.
You know, you mentioned it going back to AEW and the blood aspect. You know, if somebody gets scratched and they bleed ever so slightly in WWE, oh, the plastic gloves are on and everything, man. Dustin Rhodes is bleeding, you know, to the point where you're actually concerned that he might die. Oh, Earl Hebner, bare hands and never even thinks about it. There's no gloves. None of that shit's going on. Earl's old school as they come. And he just, I found that interesting that, you know, it's like, you know, health hazards be damned. These guys have all been tested. We know that they don't have anything. So let's just do this old school. That was something I noticed during that match. And I like Dustin's explanation. Oh, Brandy hit me in the head with a cane. Okay, a cane with a razor blade on the end that you used. But hey, who's counting?
Well, no. His explanation works because we have seen the Pharaoh Wolf Head cane. True. And that is a nice metal cane that he has. So if that's the angle they're going for, sure. It's suspension of disbelief. You have to buy into it a little bit.
No, I buy into, like, he got dropped toe-holded into the exposed turnbuckle. Now, that makes more sense.
That was a clever fucking spot right there where Cody just pulls it off, and then I'm like, oh, that's cute, because Dustin has to kick the turnbuckle into the guy's balls basically for Shattered Dreams. Right. So it's just subtleties like here in that match. That was such a beautiful match.
It was brilliant storytelling. Big Rick was saying something like, did you guys really like this match, or was it all the crowd? I'm like, no, that was a great match. The crowd was just the icing on the cake.
Now, I know Greg had a small issue with the promo afterwards because Cody broke heel character to kind of go babyface or whatever. But, you know, family trumps face and heel dynamic in my book. How did you feel about that? Because that was such a throwback to Dusty and Dustin's WCW Walk Behinders heart-to-heart promo, whatever you want to call it. Like, it was like enough words were Dusty's that I think that's what got everybody like emotional or invested in that promo. Cause between the in front of, you know, God and the whole world, and then the, I don't need a friend. I don't need this. I need a family member, essentially. Like, that was just so good. It was a beautiful fucking reference from Cody.
I liked it. I think, you know, Cody was being portrayed as the heel, but you got the sense that nobody really wanted to boo him, you know, and nobody wanted to say he's the heel because of everything that he's meant to the formation of that company. So to see him kind of realize that, okay, I've symbolically killed the last vestige of the Attitude Era by destroying Triple H's throne and my brother. And then to just basically say that, yeah, I don't need a friend. I need family. And to kind of reconcile with his brother for that. I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, I see Greg's point that, you know, Cody should have just stayed heel and done that. But I thought it was a nice touch, and it kind of brings that whole thing full circle. I don't think, you know, Dustin's last match going out that way, I'm not sure that's you know, the fitting end that everybody wanted. So I thought it was a cool moment. It was touching. I might have teared up a little bit, maybe, possibly. I don't know.
It's
remember.
Fine. So did I. Don't worry about it. you don't have Tony's to cover it up.
His eyes.
Like, Tony didn't
even watch
see
it yet.
So he
yeah,
can't
I
even
watch
pretend
that.
To have, you know, a sacred. So here's the funny thing that I was thinking with the whole Bucks versus Brotherhood, whatever they're going to call themselves. What if that's for the AAA title since the Bucks kept them and Cody and Dustin win them and then they take a trip down to Mexico to kind of bring a payday for AAA? Like, is that something that you could see possibly happening? Just kind of using the last bit of star power that maybe Dustin has or something that probably Mexico hasn't really seen? Because I can't remember the last time Goldust or Dustin went down to Mexico. Well, you know, for wrestling and not for extracurricular reasons.
Oh, yeah. I think they're going to have to get that belt back down there eventually at some point in time. I can't imagine the AAA Championship is going to be the primary AEW tag team title. Maybe it could. I guess it's possible, but you got to figure they're going to do their own and they're going to get and this is a placeholder title until they do that. But I think you got a point that, yeah, if if they want to protect the Bucks and not have them be the ones to drop the title in Mexico and let Cody and Dustin do it, they're not gonna have any problem doing the job down there. So what did you think of the AEW championship belt?
It's gaudy. And I think it's, when I saw an actual still picture of it, it doesn't look that bad, but at least the way it was shot, the way it just caught the light at so many different angles, like, it just, there's too many stones to that, you know, like, it just, it glimmers and glitters and, like, way over the top. Like, it's obviously an homage to Big Gold, because it's that same kind of style of Big Gold, and a little bit of, like, the IWGP Championship and all that other stuff.
That's what I thought.
IWGP. It's just so glittery.
And it's a really busy belt, you know? There's a lot of stuff going on there. It's almost too busy. You're looking at it and say, damn, there's a lot of shit going on with this belt. And, I mean, for the criticism of the, what is this? Is this it? Oh, God, that's revolting. A picture of Baron Corbin with the Universal Championship. That's depressing.
That's there, okay, Greg's wet dream right there. That's what it is. And he just had a text.
Greg's wet dream?
Yeah, he just had a text to Tony. That's what it is.
What do you think of Baron Corbin? I mean, you know, is this smart? I mean, people hate this guy. Greg's got a Baron Corbin sucks segment and shirt, I guess. And people just hate the shit out of the dude, and they keep pushing him. And it's like, this is like the reverse Roman Reigns thing. It's like, we're going to shove this guy down your throat, who you guys definitely don't want, and we're not going to try and portray him as a face. He's just a douchebag. What do you think of this? I mean, it's definitely eliciting a reaction. People can't stand the dude. But is it smart to push him like this, or what do you guys think?
Here's my tweet from today. Hashtag booking by Tunney. One, Corbin beats Rollins at Super Showdown for the title. Two, Rollins wins title back on the next Raw. Three, blow-off match at Stomping Ground. It's totally a Kane Austin thing. You move Baron Corbin up into the next level of being a guy who can main event things. He doesn't have to have another long title run until he's ready to do it again. And it gives Seth Rollins something to do in between and a reason for people to watch Monday Night Raw.
Or a reason for people to watch Super Showdown.
My biggest issue with Corbin, I think it's more how he's portrayed in matches. And the fact that he's a little boring in-ring anyway, but every time they put him in a match, they put him with a group of guys that are bigger than him or more muscular than him, and yet they still try to put him over as a power guy and a former Golden Gloves dude. It's a bad look. When you got Drew McIntyre, who's like your off and on best friend or whatever, Bobby Lashley, who's a lot more impressive power and athletically, Braun Strowman, who's a bigger guy, like, and they're all people that he's always focused around. It's an odd just framing of his character, because he comes off as a snivelly weasel little douchebag, but he's 6'7" and he thinks he's hot shit, and he's technically bigger than everybody else. It's just, but he's not bigger than the bigger guys, yet he tries to become buddies with the bigger guys, so that he's never really in, I guess, in jeopardy of losing his spot as his, you know, perceived top dog. It's just weird. He's that typical kind of like shitty bully kid from like high school.
Yeah.
And I guess it's relatable for people, which is why it's easy to hate him and it's easy to write his character and push it. But I wish there was just a little better direction and he wasn't as boring in the ring.
To me, I still look at him and I still see the guy who shit the bed with that briefcase cash in. I can't get that out of my head. I don't know if it's just a, you know, a failing that I have, but every time I look at him, I just think you're the guy who just cashed this in, got punched by John Cena, rolled up by an exhausted Jinder Mahal and pinned. And anyway, but I like Tunney's idea. I mean, it would just, I don't know, but the people in Saudi Arabia, they might not be that outraged or pissed off about it, but back here, people would just lose their shit. They say, oh yeah, that's it. AEW just put on this great performance and you're going to put the fucking belt on Baron Corbin. That's it. I'm never watching again until tomorrow night when Raw comes on. I got to see what happens, but
yeah,
you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, those were my thoughts. I mean, Baron Corbin, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of his either for the couple reasons I brought up, but I guess he elicits a reaction. He kind of he owns his character. It's not like he's trying to be the cool heel. He wants to be the douchey heel. And there, I got to give him credit there. You know what I mean?
He does it very well. He really does the whole douchebag heel gimmick very well. Drew's like the cool heel, the kind of the heel that you want to root for. And you want to say, why don't you put the belt on this guy? Why isn't he the number one contender? Not Baron frickin' Corbin. Give me some Drew McIntyre's something. But
oh, I agree with you completely. Like, I would have loved to see Drew in a position where he's not just lackey to someone. Like, that's been his gimmick as soon as he's come back up from the, you know, from NXT. Like, him and Dolph. Then it was, like, him and Bobby and Baron. Now it's him and Shane.
Well, like tonight, he claymores R-Truth into unconsciousness. Elias picks up the pin, takes the title, and you can see Drew just walking away, smirking and shaking his head like, yeah, you go ahead and take that piece of shit, man. I'm going elsewhere.
That was the best part.
Tell me you guys knew R-Truth was getting that title back, though. I did.
As soon as I heard Shane say the it's done after the match, I'm like, if Roman doesn't help R-Truth, I'm going to be a little cranky.
Well, there's no way Elias could hold that belt right now, right? The belt brings Elias down if he holds that belt, right?
All right. Here's the last topic of conversation, I think. The 24/7 title. I haven't talked about it much yet. I'm sure you guys have talked about it. Is it a completely joke title, or can they legitimize this thing? Does it really matter who carries the title? I mean, if they put it on a Drew McIntyre, does it suddenly take on an entirely different sort of meaning because Drew's a killer? R-Truth is not so much.
Well, and that's the thing. It started off as bringing Santino Marella back to the WWE, i.e. let's bring some comedy back into the WWE. Because the whole thing about it, while it's been entertaining, it's been comedy, correct? So now the way you change this dynamic, and it's way too soon for this, is to put it on someone like a Drew McIntyre. I brought up the fact that what if you put it on Brock Lesnar? It flips the whole thing around. People are looking to stay away from him because he's looking to pin someone 24/7 as opposed to everybody's looking to pin him 24/7, right? Do you see the switch in dynamic there?
Or Matt Riddle, you know, they want to take it to NXT. Give it to Matt. Let him run with that. Or
right. He's on his couch. He's totally stoned. And someone comes in to fucking try and beat him for the 24/7 title.
Or bro, Pete Dunne is getting his ass kicked by Walter. So you might as well have him be the 24/7 champion.
I just want to see them go all the way with this title because to me this was like the PG version of the DDT Heavy Metal Weight Championship, which even if you don't watch it, everybody knows what it is because every user of Reddit won the championship at some point and a blow-up doll won the championship. I want whoever the 24/7 champion is to kind of interrupt Bayley's entrance at one point and have one of the Bayley buddies accidentally pin them for 1, 2, 3. And then the Bayley buddy is champion. That's what I want to happen to this belt. That would be fantastic in my book.
It's too bad Crash isn't still, you know, able to win the championship.
I mean, Eric Young is doing a really good Crash impression aside from the giant tattoo on his back.
True. Yeah. When is the first time a woman takes this title? It's coming.
That's actually something I've talked about with somebody else. And Carmella, I thought it might.
Carmella pinned Truth during a dance break.
I thought it might have been Carmella, but at the same time, yeah, I think they just kind of continue this little thing until it gets dry. And then at some point they'll turn it into something else. I don't know. It's hard to really see it not transition into a TV title, though, or something like that. Can you really keep 24/7 going? For how long can you keep it going?
As long depends. As it takes, I guess.
Yeah, it depends on who holds it. Because Carmella would be a perfect person to take the belt for the first woman to do it. Because they could always do something stupid where somehow they're in like a tanning salon or something like that. So they try to hide in a tanning bed. And then the referee just happens to walk by and opens like the top end or something like that and sees them in there and counts three. And then Carmella's like, wait, no, I didn't know. Uh-oh. And then it turns into like this really awkward moment for Truth because he's like, all right, now you lay down. I have to pin you. And then people are like, What did he just say to her?
I just want to see. I want to see Gerald Briscoe pin somebody in their sleep again.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Gerald Briscoe is a 24/7 champion. All that kind of stuff would be going on.
Shh.
Yes, he's not.
I think the only real positive that I put on it for now is, until it turns into maybe something better, is the fact that it's getting people on TV that haven't had an opportunity to get on TV. And maybe there's some way that you have a segment with this and you don't win it, but you have this really funny, cool segment and it leads to you getting other things. And it's just another way for talent to show everybody who they are and the writers who they are and Vince who they are, etc.
Plus, we also got R-Truth's Old Town Road kind of parody song. So that was wonderful, too.
Hey, and Elias is now a former champion.
There you go.
Counts for something.
He actually got a singles title for, what, 20 minutes or whatever it was. So there we go.
It's something.
And it would have worked on Elias because people interrupt him anyway. So could you imagine him getting halfway through the song and then a wave of people come out to try to take the title from him? That would have been funny.
All right, Andrew, you want to take us home here?
I mean, I guess we could do the whole sign off and, you know, go to sleep and all that other fun stuff. So where can the people find you, Mr. Tunney?
At PC Tunney. You can also check out the DWI podcast at Podcast DWI. And make sure you go to thechairshot.com to check out the Chairshot staff picks. You will find the rest of our picks. And I don't know, I might even convince somebody more knowledgeable on NXT than me to give their take this weekend on each match, but we'll see how that turns out.
Ooh, and Big Dave, what's your hookup for everybody listening?
Well, you can check us out on the Attitude of Aggression's webpage at attitudeofaggression.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/attitudeofaggression, and follow us on Twitter at attitudeagg. And Instagram at Attitude of Aggression. You can see some of the pictures from the big weekend in Vegas. Only the wrestling related ones. The other stuff, premium content. So
nice. You have a premium Instagram. I like that.
I just started it right this very second. So
that's very smart to do. I appreciate that cover right there. But yeah, and everybody knows I'm Andrew Snowflake Balls. You find me at IWC Warchief on Twitter. I write stuff occasionally on thechairshot.com. We got wonderful, wonderful podcasts on Chairshot Network. We got this. We've got Tony's wonderful DWI. We've got Chairshot Radio, which, you know, I happen to do a guest spot on recently. So that's all fun and games. And we've got, you know, the Greg DeMarco show and his little offshoot Miranda show, too, is some of the bigger ones. And, you know, what you gonna do, man? What you gonna do? Double or Nothing came and went. It was the talk of the town, talk of the IWC, talk of everything. Wow. So it's a fun time to be a wrestling fan again. It's a fun time, I guess, to kind of see if the will they, won't they of WWE, if they will do something, if they won't do something, and what's scripted, what's not. what can I say? What can I say? What, Tony, what can I say to make sure we go? Is it Shalom?
Hit it, Carly.
Oh, there you go. Hit it, Carly.